In Celtic history, 1965 is famously remembered for the arrival of Jock Stein and all the subsequent success which followed. But that year also saw another small piece of club history, the first publication of the Celtic View. For years, the View was a must-read for all Celtic fans. But it's not been the only way that Celtic fans have kept up to date with specific news and comments concerning their club. This podcast tells the story of the Celtic View, but also the other different ways that Celtic supporters have been able to find out all about the Celts. The driving force behind the original publication of the Celtic View came from Jack McGinn. In later years, he became Celtic chairman, but in the 1960s he was working in the newspaper industry. McGinn believed that Celtic could successfully publish their own newspaper. The rationale behind this was twofold. There was certainly a commercial opportunity to make money, but there was also a belief that fans would want to find out more about Celtic and bypass the often negative coverage which normal newspapers included. In many ways, the club could not have chosen a better time to start producing their own in-house newspaper. 1965 also coincided with the arrival of Jock Stein and started a period of stratospheric success for the Hoops. The name for this new newspaper was to be the Celtic View. It was first published on the 11th of August 1965, costing just 4 pence. Its first front cover was a mixture of pictures, stories and also adverts. One of the stories explained the purpose of the newspaper, whilst the main section described Celtic boss Jock Stein's decision to also work as Scotland manager. From the start, the View proved to be hugely popular with fans, selling tens of thousands of copies in its first week and building on this in the subsequent years. Since that first copy, the look has changed numerous times, going from a black and white and green newspaper style to a full-colour magazine in more recent years. The publication's success stemmed from its inclusion of features that the fans wanted to see. As well as interviews with players and the manager, there was also sections that covered club history, statistics and fixtures, and other sections. Quizzes and fan photos helped boost sales too. However, as well-liked as the Celtic View became, it was far from the first club publication that was popular with supporters. As well as the Wee Green Book, the most obvious other one was the Matchday Programme. The CelticProgrammes.co.uk website gives a fascinating insight into the history of these. There are examples of matchday programmes which can be found as far back as the 1920s, including a Celtic game versus Hearts in 1929. However, these were not official club publications and instead printed by a private company. In the aftermath of World War II, Celtic did finally publish their own programme. This happened for the 1946 New Year's Day game when Rangers came to Glasgow's East End. The four-page publication was the only one of its kind made that season. But then, almost at the very end of 1946, Celtic printed another programme, this time for a visit by Clyde to Celtic Park. Thereafter, the publication of these documents became much more common. In 1947-48, Celtic made a programme for every home game of the season. Although, given that this was also the same year the boys came close to relegation, and in fact needed a last day win to guarantee their safety, it might also be seen as something of a jinx. By the time the 1950s began, programmes were becoming a common sight at Celtic Park, as well as grounds across Scotland and further afield. This was the era when they became an item for collectors, with many people keeping them as prized possessions. There's numerous examples of matches from this era continuing to be sought after by modern day programme collectors. Obvious examples include the 1953 Coronation Cup final, when Celtic famously beat Hibs, as well as the boys' 7-1 demolition of Rangers in the 1957 League Cup. Programmes serve various purposes. They would generally include basic team information, as well as a range of adverts. There were also usually articles, perhaps telling the club history, or describing the Celts' opponents. On other occasions, the programme, and also the Celtic View, have been used as tools for the club to communicate with and sometimes lecture supporters, including about their behaviour. There are numerous examples of this occurring from the 1960s through to the 1990s, including manager comments on this. As the years have gone on, programmes have become bigger and consequently more expensive. In the 1950s and 60s, programmes tended to cost around 3 pence, a substantially lower figure than is now the case. This is also true for the Celtic View, which cost only 4 pence when first available. Partly related to a rise in costs, in recent years, the View and Matchday programme have both suffered in the same way as the rest of the print media. Simply put, sales have fallen as fans increasingly can get their Celtic news from free online sources. This has led to an entirely new method of spreading Celtic news, history and commentary. In the early 2000s, blogs and forums became a popular way of Celtic fans having their say. This includes the still popular Huddle Board and others like Kerrydale Street or Celtic Noise. This method of fan engagement went on to become much more mainstream. Celtic fans wanting to read club news, history and commentary can visit websites such as the Celtic Star and the Celtic Blog. And the potential that fan media offers is also recognised by more established media outlets. For instance, the Herald and Glasgow Times publish the Celtic Way website too. Of course, it's not just about the written word. Podcasts and live broadcasts are now many people's main method of learning about Celtic. It's often joked that every middle-aged Celtic fan has their own podcast. Sometimes these are even available as games are taking place. The oldest running of these is the Celtic Underground, which began in 2005. Now, the biggest of these is likely Axon, or A Celtic State of Mind, which not only offers regular podcasts, but has branched into other events such as speakers. As well as this, there are numerous accounts including the Celtic Exchange, 20 Minute Tims, The Huddle Breakdown, A Grand Old Podcast, and Four Tims in a Podcast. However, the rise of online fan media was not the first time that Celtic supporters were able to have their own say on club events. Across the decades, there's been different ways this has happened. Perhaps the most obvious of these are Celtic fanzines, of which there's been numerous examples. The earliest of these goes back to the 1960s. The Shamrock fanzine was produced by a supporters club based in Edinburgh. And in recent years, a Celtic history fanzine using the same name has also been printed. However, although a Celtic fanzine was available in the 1960s, it was the 1980s when fanzines became hugely popular across all clubs in Britain. For Celtic, the most well-known of these publications is surely not The View, with its title clearly referencing the official club newspaper. Not The View and other fanzines became known for their irreverent approach. They could be hugely critical of the club when needed, and many people credit them for being an important part of the supporter campaigns to bring down Celtic's old board in the 1990s. Since then, there's been numerous other fanzines, which have either started and disappeared, or in some cases still exist. Examples of this include The Celt, The Alternative View, Once a Tim, More Than 90 Minutes, Boyzone, Chucky Allah, Jungle Drums, and CQN magazine. As well as fanzines, there were other ways for fans to write about Celtic, in particular the club's history. Celtic are one of the clubs in the world which surely has the most books published concerning their story. Arguably the first official book was The Story of the Celtic, written by legendary manager Willie Mailey and published in 1939. After this, there were other books, particularly player stories such as Charlie Tully, Jimmy Johnson and Billy McNeil. But it was maybe the publication of renowned Celtic history book The Glory and the Dream in the 1980s which started a real taste for Celtic history. Since then, many club researchers have become well known, including Pat Woods and Tom Campbell, who wrote A Glory in the Dream, and also David Potter. In more recent years, and especially with the rise of self-publication, there's been an explosion in the number of books which are available, often printed by Celtic-specific publishers such as the Celtic Star or Celtic Quick News. The late Celtic historian David Potter once remarked that there could never be enough Celtic history books, and this will remain the case as long as there are new stories to tell. Despite predictions of the end of the so-called mainstream media, one of the main ways that Celtic supporters, and fans of all clubs, find out about their team is TV, radio and newspapers. However, there are so many other options too, if Celtic fans want club-specific stories. This has commonly been the case since the 1950s and 60s, especially with the first publication of the Celtic View. The rise of the internet age has again altered how this happens. No one knows for sure what the next change will be, but it surely won't be long before someone suggests implants which send messages and stories straight to your brain. If you want to learn more about Celtic history, follow Hail Hail History on Twitter X and Blue Sky. You can also take part in free Celtic walking tours. Visit celticwalkingtours.wordpress.com for more information.